Hello and welcome to the Ambitious and Passion. My name is Bao Yang. I am your host and I am a world alchemist. I love writing website copy and blog posts that feel like a soul calling to your dream clients. I created this podcast as a safe place to talk about all the ups and downs of being an empath and an ambitious one in this world. Entrepreneurship is tough. I don't need to tell you. And I also believe that we don't need to go all through this alone. Through my own insight, tips, but also interviews with fellow ambitious empath, I hope to inspire you to fully embrace your sensitivity and create a life and business that feels aligned with you. If you are looking for a beautiful community of ambitious empath and vibrant sensitive, this podcast is for you. Today, I'm receiving Jennifer Moore, and she is an amazing person. We have spent the last almost hour exchanging about our experiences as empath. She has so much wisdom. She has lived so much. She has her own views around the empathetic nature, being an empath entrepreneur. It was a very interesting conversation. I absolutely loved it. But before I tell you everything about this conversation, let me introduce her to you. Former emotional hot mess and world-class ovulizer, Jennifer Moore supports other highly sensitive and intuitive women to release empathic overwhelm and distress so that they can access their inner wisdom and power. Jen brings over 30 years of experience to her work, where she merged practicality, intuition, and skill to offer insight, guidance, and emotional freedom to those who she serves. Jen holds a master's degree in psychology and religion. She's an accredited master trainer for EFT International, founder of the Empathic Mastery Academy, author of Amazon bestseller Empathic Mastery, host of the Empathic Mastery Show, and she is the creator of two Oracle decks and the photographic Healing Tarot. I met Jen through a platform called Podmatch, and I love this platform. So I call it Tinder for podcasts, but I don't think it's an official title for it. Podmatch is so simple to use and yet extremely powerful because a lot of the steps involved in the process of podcast interviews, from applying to recording, automatize. It makes life very simple. And most of all, thanks to Podmatch, I get to meet such interesting profiles, one that I have never met otherwise, just like Jennifer Moore. So if you are serious about podcasting and you want to be featured on podcasts or look for guests for your own podcast, I can only recommend you Podmatch. You can find an affiliate link in the show notes. But if you want to listen more to Jennifer Moore's story now and how she navigates her being an empathetic entrepreneur, stay tuned because we are about to start.
Emotions can be tough to navigate, but you've got strengths to lead you on your way. Time to take control, time to reach your goals, time to let emotions go. The Ambitious Empath Show with Bao Ye.
Welcome back. Thank you for tuning in. And if you are new here, make sure to hit the subscribe button. If you are an ambitious empath and you would like to expand your horizon and feel inspired and connected to a larger empath community, you are invited to subscribe to the Ambitious Empath Digest. Through the weekly Ambitious Empath Digest, you will be reminded of the latest episode of this podcast and have a curated list of past episodes in case you missed them, but you could still benefit from their wisdom. But most of all, you will receive a generous dose of insights and resources from fantastic fellow sensitive entrepreneurs. You know it, they understand the unique challenges and opportunities you face as an ambitious empath. So subscribe to the new Ambitious Empath Digest. The link is in the show notes. Today, I am receiving Jennifer Moore. Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
I am very well. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm very looking forward to this conversation.
Me too.
Okay, before anything else, I'm always so curious about people. I really would like to know, like, do you identify as an empath or HSP?
Yes. I identify as both, for sure.
Is there a moment when you felt like you might be different? Is there a crucial moment when you realize that you might be an empath, or you came across those terms and you were just like, oh, that's me?
Yes. So that's like, in some ways, this is like, there's three parts to this answer. So when did I notice I was different? When I went into nursery school and I started being around other children. And I noticed that other children could, like, things would just roll off their back. They wouldn't take things too personally. They would just sort of shake things off and they just keep going. And they were just different than I was. And so that was sort of the first point where I was like, oh, I am more sensitive than the other kids. I am responding or reacting differently than these other kids. And the kids let me know that too. Like they were like, you weird.
Mm-hmm.
But I also was a child in the 60s. And so, because I was born in the early 60s. And so as a result of that, the word empath didn't really exist in pop culture. Like the very first exposure or the very first use of the word was in a science fiction story called The Empath, go figure. And that came out in the mid 50s. But it wasn't until late 60s when Star Trek had the famous episode, the original Star Trek had this episode called The Empath, where people started to think about it. But it really wasn't until like we had the next generation of Star Trek and Deanna Troi, where all of a sudden the idea of what an empath is started to really make it into mainstream culture. So I didn't really know what I was. I just knew I was something different than the other children. And it wasn't until I was in my late teens that I ran into, you know, I was hanging out with a bunch of other people and, you know, people into science fiction and stuff like that. And this other kid was like, you're an empath. I'm an empath. And somehow it just landed. It really registered for me. But the thing is that even at that point in time, I had no understanding of what that meant in terms of how it was affecting every single aspect of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so before I go down that rabbit hole, it seems to me like, let's just start with the definition of what is an empath. And so the thing is, because this is not a clinical term, this is something that you're going to find different people are going to have slightly different answers or widely different answers. So this is my experience of it. And, you know, as I like to say, take what you like, leave the rest. Your mileage may vary. But for me, an empath is a being, could be a human, it could be an animal, who picks up the thoughts, the feelings, the energy, and the sensations that are coming from the world around them. But unlike somebody who is intuitive or psychic, what happens with an empath is we process the information as if it's our own. And so a psychic or an intuitive might walk into a house where there had been like a death or a fight or some kind of situation that was really challenging, and they'd go, wow, really feels like something intense happened in here. It seems like, you know, wow, there must have been a really intense fight, or oh, I wonder who died in here. It feels really sad in here. The empath walks into the exact same space and goes, why do I suddenly feel so sad? Why do I suddenly feel so angry? Why do I suddenly feel all of these ways? And so the challenge with being an empath is that often we have a hard time distinguishing what's ours and what's not ours, because unlike somebody who is psychic or intuitive, we don't recognize always that it's coming from outside of ourselves. Now, empath, intuitive, psychic, highly sensitive person, even medium, all of these things often kind of cross-pollinate. And so it's not like you're just one thing. A lot of times people are multiple things.
Right. I was about to say, like, if you hone your gift, I mean, to some point, you may also develop like psychic abilities being an empath.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing is, in some ways, that sensitivity, that capacity to pick up and receive information that empaths have, is absolutely the same capacity that somebody with a great deal of psychic ability has. It's just that people who have psychic ability alone pick up information and understand that they're picking up information, not that suddenly they're experiencing something that's about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Super interesting. I also really liked your explanation of, you know, the history of the word empath in pop culture, because I never heard that before and I absolutely love it. I could really picture how those episodes might have looked like talking about the empath.
Oh, so the first episode that came out on, I believe it was 1968. And it was, you know, your classic story with like Kirk, Spock, and McCoy all end up and some extra in a red uniform, an ensign that you know is going to die by the end of the episode. But Spock, McCoy, and Kirk all ended up on this planet with these bad aliens who were doing experiments. And wouldn't you have it that there was this other alien who was there, who was this, her name just happened to be Jem, and she had the ability to heal people by laying hands on them and absorbing all of their pain. And that episode, they went through rounds of torturing Spock and McCoy and Kirk, and then Jem would go over and put her hands on them, and she'd get this, like, she'd start to cry, and she had, like, they did this bad time-lapse photography where she would, you know, the bruises would go to Kirk's, from Kirk's face to her face, and then she'd collapse in a heap, and then, like, a few hours later, she'd sort of wake up, and she'd be okay again. And it was a really great, I mean, it's a totally cheesy episode, but it's also a really great episode. But it also, for me, and I think for a lot of people, was like the first sort of model of how you heal people. And, you know, so like, I just assumed that the way you're supposed to help people is by absorbing all their pain. And, you know, the problem with this, especially if you are wanting to be an entrepreneur, is that absorbing other people's pain as the way to make things better is, it might work in the short term, but in the long term, it causes massive, massive problems.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel that when you enter the world of entrepreneurship as an empath, this is just the one thing you have to learn first, like how to set boundaries, how to take care of yourself, how not to try to save the world because you're going to burn out, and worse, it's not doing anyone any good. But you want to tell us more about your journey around being an empath and also an entrepreneur?
Absolutely. So in terms of my journey, as in some ways, I think I became an entrepreneur because I'm an empath, because being in corporate culture and like the idea of working in environments where there's a lot of subterfuge, there's a lot of like going along to get along, it baffled me. It was just completely confusing. And I found it a lot easier to choose to be an entrepreneur because I had a lot more autonomy and I had a lot more freedom. And I also got to decide who I was spending my time around and who I was, you know, connecting to. And so in a way, the choice to be an entrepreneur was as much about what I didn't want as it was about what I did want. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I tried my hand in a number of different places. The first thing I did when I graduated from art school way back in the mid to late 80s was I picked up tarot cards and started working as a psychic and reading cards for people. But, you know, it's funny you were saying one of the very first things that we need to establish as empaths in business is boundaries. And what I would say is that I agree completely. And I did not establish boundaries at first. And like, I had no clue. And I also just really didn't necessarily understand the importance of boundaries at that point in time. And so when I first started my journey as an empathic entrepreneur, I was undercharging substantially. You know, like I remember the idea of charging $60 an hour was just like terrifying to me. And I went through, like, I had all kinds of stories about other people's money and about whether somebody could afford things. So I had a tendency to over deliver, to undercharge and over deliver and over give. My time boundaries were like, if somebody wanted something and they needed it and I was not working, it wasn't uncommon for me to be like, sure, I'll come in and do this thing for you. But in addition to sort of those logistical issues, I also would take on the concerns. I would take on, like, I would come away from having a consultation with somebody or doing a session for somebody, and I would come away feeling really weird. And if I was working with somebody who was really fearful and confused and not sure where they were going with their life, then for the next couple days to week, I would feel uncertain and doubtful and unsure of what was going on. And I had no idea that this was related to being an empath. Like, I just did not understand it, which is what I was saying before, that I knew I was an empath, but I didn't understand what that meant in terms of how it was affecting my physical, mental, and emotional health.
Mm-hmm. And I feel that it's a lesson that we always have to relearn, you know, like,
oh, yeah.
I've done all this work. I think I'm good with people and with my relationship, but if I watch a TV series, I get so involved emotionally with the characters. I dream about it. The next day, I am in the same mood as, you know, the TV series left me. Usually it's going to be blue because it's going to be deep conversations and all this around life and everything. So I can really see how watching something in the evening can, you know, have an impact on me for 2 days at least. And so
absolutely,
I totally get you.
Yeah. During the first year of the pandemic, I had to curate my television viewing so carefully. And the thing I ended up binge watching multiple times was that Hallmark series called The Good Witch, which if you've ever watched it, it's incredibly sweet, but it is also it is just so fluffy. It is so like, there's nothing bad that ever happens. It's like this sweet little village of people and nobody goes through anything really, really hard. And that's what I could tolerate because everything else just, I was already so jangled by the intensity going on in the world that I was like, you know what? You're going to watch this. Ironically, the other thing that I watched a lot of during that time was Grey's Anatomy, which is, it's like trauma porn. It's like nonstop trauma. But I have a theory about why it didn't bother me. And my theory is, unlike a lot of things where you can have trauma, but there's a lot of suppression and denial and avoidance of the emotions, Grey's Anatomy is just like in your face with feelings. And for empaths, the thing is, in my experience, one of the hardest things that we go through as empaths is when we pick up an emotion and we're sensing something that's real, but the people around us are saying, that's not happening. This isn't real. You're making too much up about this. Like, you're worrying about nothing. Let it go. Stop worrying about it. You're making too big a deal out of it. You're being oversensitive. And the thing is that that causes empaths to doubt themselves, which is also, interestingly, kind of like if somebody's a psychic, they're not necessarily going to get the same kind of invalidation. But when empaths are picking up on emotions that are going on around them, especially emotions people are trying to hide, The challenge is that then we will often be invalidated and told that's not real. And that causes a level of self-doubt that can be really challenging. So what I loved about Grey's Anatomy was the fact that everything is transparent in that series. Everybody is going through a hard time, but there's no suppression of that hard time. And in a way, that was really refreshing because it was especially at a time where there was just so much divisiveness and so many people with such different opinions. It was just really nice to be in a place where it was kind of watching something where everything was kind of consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I can really relate to having to be really mindful of the television, the media, anything that I consume, because It definitely can affect me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I understand what you mean when you talk about Grey's Anatomy, because I feel that I didn't watch that TV series, but I do have the same feeling when someone, you know, like I had a friend, it's a long distance friendship and we live in different continents. And we don't text each other very often, but like once she started to tell me about her grandpa's funerals and I felt so good about her telling me about that. And not because, of course, I was happy from, you know, what she was leaving about and that she had to go through this experience and all this, that she lost her grandpa, but But I had such a sense of finally someone is having a true talk with me, because I also live in an environment when I feel that people here, they like to preserve this false sense of harmony. So not going to talk about things. Yes. And there are a lot of topics that are taboo when you just think in the end, everyone is going through this. Like, you cannot mention depression because people are going to feel weird about it. You cannot mention miscarriages. You cannot mention anything. Mm. And I'm not the one who just goes to strangers and want to talk about that. But I just feel that, you know, like if you hang out with people and regularly, it should be okay to mention that, you know, it should be okay to mention, yeah, well, I'm going through a hard time because I just lost a baby. But then here's like, oh, so what are your plans for Christmas? And you just like, so, which is not even a word. And so when my friend texted me about her grandpa's funerals and told me everything about that and the dynamic in the family because of it and all this, I just felt like, mm-hmm. thank God someone is talking to me.
Somebody is speaking their truth.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's funny you mentioned funerals, because I was actually thinking about how I have been to funerals where, and I mean, this may sound really weird to the audience, but I've been to funerals where it feels really good. And part of the reason why it often feels really good is because it's so real. Like people are, and I'm not talking about like the tragic loss of a child or something, but a funeral where, you know, it's an appropriate, like that there is an appropriate expression of grief. Mm-hmm. And I've been to funerals where there is an appropriate expression of grief, and there's something very freeing about that, very releasing, very real about it. Then I've also been to basically what here in the United States we refer to as WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. Mm-hmm. I've been to WASP funerals as well, where there is so, everything is so shut down. Everything is so like keeping up appearances. I went to a funeral many years ago where all they could talk about was, and the person who had died was an absolute, just really mean person, you know, and raging alcoholic. All they could talk about was his golf game the entire time. And there's just such a difference between being in a place where you're surrounded by people who are really showing up for their, you know, authentic in their feelings, versus that kind of like, let's keep up appearances, let's make this look all good. And it's just like the difference between being around a place where everything's flowing and moving, versus being in a place where everything is constricted and tightened up and nobody's speaking the truth. So, yeah.
I think that once you have lived a little bit as an empath, you cannot stand those environments anymore when it's all just facade. Because it's just, there's so much richness from all the emotions and experiences you're going to have in life. And it's not always good. And it's not about being happy and fulfilled all the time, but there's such beauty in that. The people who are actually protecting themselves from that and just stay constant in their moods and everything, it's just, they are the ones who are missing out.
Yes. It's like all the color has been dialed out of their life. And the thing is, like, I mean, if we just try to keep it stable, if we just try to keep everything even, I think everything gets really stagnant. And the other thing is that when we resist an emotion, when we try to avoid feeling our feelings, what we actually do is we amplify them. That resistance, you know, there's a saying, what we resist persists. And so the irony is, when we are present to our feelings, whether they're happy feelings or sad feelings or scared feelings or trusting feelings or like harmonious feelings or angry feelings, when we accept those feelings and we surrender to them and we let ourselves just feel them, they move. And mm-hmm. often they pass and they transform and they shift very quickly.
Right.
But when we try to avoid them or deny them or just kind of like, you know, push them away, they have a tendency to linger. And I believe that if we don't deal with them, if we don't deal with them and we just keep on avoiding and avoiding and avoiding, eventually it is going to show up, like the volume of our inner world is going to get turned up louder and louder. And so what I've seen is very often that will ultimately turn into circumstances that are really challenging. A lot of times it could be physical health issues, but sometimes it's like, you know, all of a sudden you've been hating your job forever, and then all of a sudden you walk in and you get laid off.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't deal with what we are not happy about or what's really deeply impacting us, eventually our body or sort of the universe is gonna deal with it for us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I want to go back to what you were saying at the time when you were tarot reading for people and you were unable to set boundaries. Because one thing that when you were telling your story, it made me think that I think this is one lesson that we have to learn as empath entrepreneur, is that actually when you start to set boundaries, because at the beginning you want to serve everyone, right?
Yes.
And you feel that whatever you're charging, you're always going to discriminate against some people who will not be able to afford it.
Yes.
And then you feel bad about that. And you feel that your gift should be there, you know, like to, you know, for free, like, you know, Jesus doing that.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And then when you start to work with people and it doesn't feel good, and you start to set boundaries and to think about the type of people you want to work with, you realize that actually when you help people who have already this habit of helping themselves, it's so much more fulfilling for you. You get so much like bigger like results, but also it's beautiful to see because it's a real collaboration and it's not you trying to save someone who is just like drowning, but they never learn and how to swim and they don't want to, and you're drowning with them.
Yeah.
And actually when you start to work with people who have this accountability and took responsibility for the things in their lives, and it has not been easy, they are not perfect, but they are doing the work, then it's so much more beautiful. And I feel that I wanted to say that because it feels as an empath very often that the world is counting on us, when actually when you choose who you work with, I mean, there's so much more beauty out of it.
100%. Yes, everything you're saying, I completely agree with. Both of my parents are in human services. My mom was a psychiatric nurse and a hypnotherapist. And my mother's boundaries were like, she would come home from work and every single night she'd spend 2 hours or longer in her office talking on the phone with clients in crisis. Like, my mom had horrible boundaries. And my dad worked as a social worker and he started in Children's Protective Services. And then eventually he went into hospice. But so I grew up in a family where there was an attitude of like, it is good to be in human services and to be helping the people. What I didn't understand as a kid, and really didn't understand until fairly recently, is that the thing about anybody who's working for a nonprofit and working in a human service agency is that they are not being paid by the people who are receiving the services. And they are not necessarily the people, but there is an entire infrastructure that is set up to pay the salaries of the people who are being of service.
Mm-hmm.
And what I had been realizing and had felt was that whole thing of like, well, I should be giving it away for free, that sort of like be spiritual and just give it all away. And it took me many years to realize that I, as an individual entrepreneur with an overhead, with a life and expenses and responsibilities, as well as a lot of investment in education and in mentoring and support, but especially like, I mean, I've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in my training and in my education and learning how to do what I do, that I'm not a charitable organization. I don't have any infrastructure. And a charitable organization still makes money. It's just that they're not making the money from the people that they are serving.
Mm-hmm.
And when I realized that, I was like, oh, you know, unless I change everything, the whole structure of my business and turn into a charity and find other people to do fundraising for me, I need to understand that I need to charge a reasonable amount of money for the services that I offer. So for me, what was really helpful was realizing that it was possible to create tiered offerings and looking at the idea of like I can make an offering where it's like you can purchase a $22 or $44 mini course or something that's all DIY, like watch the video recording that I did a while back and do the work yourself. But then if you want to be involved in a live, active, interactive group with me in real time, that's going to be a different level of engagement and investment. Mm-hmm. And if you want to work with me one-on-one and get that really solid handholding, that's another level of investment. And the thing is, what you were saying about people, like when you just give it away, and what I heard in what you were saying is what I've noticed is that a lot of times, if they don't have any skin in the game, like if it doesn't cost them anything to be involved in it, then the thing is, they're not going to take it very seriously. And a lot of times for me, especially in the earlier part of my career, I was caring more about the results for that person than they were for themselves. I was caring more about their choices, their actions, because I definitely met people who wanted to be fixed or wanted somebody else to take charge of all of it. Mm-hmm. And everything you're saying about it needs to be a collaboration. It needs to be somebody who's willing to go to any lengths to shift things for themselves. Like that it's essential that people are just as invested in their healing process or their entrepreneurial journey or whatever it is that you are, however you are serving. It's so important that people are as invested as we are, if not mm-hmm. more so.
Yeah. And I just want to add, because I know my words could be misinterpreted as I am victim blaming and I'm not, you know, understanding how actually people really have like live with discriminations and all these marginalized people have so much more disadvantage than other populations. And first of all, I do. My parents come from an immigration, you know, background, but it's really not about how much money you have. And if we want to give it for free to you, it's really about, are you playing the victim card or are you taking care of yourself? And I think that you and I mean, and other people who are listening are probably, you know, smart enough to recognize those people who, yeah, okay, some people have like horrible life conditions, but you still find like when you meet them and you talk to them, you still feel that, you know, they wanted it. They just really, they're fighting. They are trying, they're fighting, they're here, they are in the fight, in the arena. And you also have other type of people who are like, well, life has not been easy, but if someone could save me, that'd be great. And so I'm really talking about those two, like these two type of people. Like it's really about that and not about your ethnical background or whatever, you know?
Yes. Well, and this is such an incredibly, incredibly subtle and complicated topic because it is victim blaming and sort of they should pull themselves up by their bootstraps that doesn't look at socioeconomic issues, racism, sexism, any of these things. There gets to be this place where it's like, ooh, that is just really icky. But there is also this place where there are some people who are stuck. Now, I believe some people are stuck because of trauma, because they are so dysregulated that they have been and that they've just, maybe it's cultural, maybe it's systemic, but where they are so stuck that they don't know how to get out of their own way. But what's interesting is when you have a person in that place and somebody comes along and offers them a lifeline and they don't take it,
Yeah. That's
that place. And I think about like in some ways, an analogy would be looking at an addict and particularly like, let's just say, you know, let's look at an alcoholic. It's like there comes a point where you get to decide if you're going to keep on drinking. And it's like, if you don't know any better that your trauma is affecting you or that, you know, alcohol is making you nuts or sugar is making you nuts or whatever, then I'm going to have more understand. I don't know, like I'll give you a pass. But if you are like, if somebody has gotten their, you know, their sixth DUI, and they've been through all these things and all these people are like, the problem is this. Mm-hmm. There does get to be the point where it's like, at what point do we become willing to save our own lives? At what point do we get sick and tired of being sick and tired and say, I am willing to go to any lengths and do whatever I can to change my life. I know a woman who was stony broke, UK woman, so stony broke, who started working with a mentor that we both have. But when she first started working with her, she had no money whatsoever. All she could afford was the free master classes and the $22 special, like little correspondence course. And she did them. She like showed up for every single masterclass. She answered all the journal prompts. She worked with the material deeply, deeply, deeply. And she started to shift her life. And then it got to the point where like she started to have more financial abundance. She started to have more agency and advocacy. And at this point in time, she is a thriving entrepreneur. But it started at a point where she didn't have any resources. She didn't have anything available except for her willingness to do whatever she could. Because the other side of it is that we have so much information available to us for free now. You could go to YouTube University and learn all kinds of things. You can go to archive.org and find tons of free books and free music. Like you could listen to, just go onto any of the major platforms for podcasts and find a podcast about whatever it is you need to learn. And so the idea that information, unless somebody has absolutely no access to a phone or the internet, which is a very small percentage of especially people in the United States and most first world countries, it's like there does get to be that point where it's like even money is not really an excuse anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that example. I thought about a few people that I know who were, you know, I mean, we all have known those people who are stuck in a relationship, for example. And every time that something goes bad, they are in a crisis, then they call you and you get involved. And then you think that they need saving and then you help them, but then they just go back to that relationship and over for years and until you realize I cannot help them. And this is really the same way you talked about the example of a drug addict, an alcoholic. We're really talking about those type of people.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I don't know about you, but when I was younger, I had an incredibly high tolerance for listening to people tell their stories. Like I had this incredibly high tolerance for like pull out the little violin because I just could listen to people go on and on about their misery because I didn't realize how much it was affecting me. And then I got to the point where I started to realize that there were people in my life who were telling the exact same story over and over again for years on end, same complaints, same issue. And never doing anything different about it. It was always everybody else's fault. It was always somebody else doing this thing. And they were just sort of staying in that same place of the same, like they were on repeat.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to notice that there's a really big difference between when somebody's just going through their narrative and just like repeating, they're just repeating the same old script over and over again, versus when somebody is present in their heart and sharing the true feelings that they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really different in my experience between expressing the feeling of like, I feel really tender and sad because I just lost my job or because I don't know what the next step is going to be versus the world is out to get me and nobody likes me and everything. And this is a problem. And this is a problem. And this is a problem. Like what I've noticed is that the people who are all in the story, they're in their head and they're in the story. Whereas when people are in the emotion and in their heart, it has this way of flowing, which goes back to talking about like the difference between the sincere funeral and the WASP funeral.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I have room for days for people to be present with their emotions. I will like the deepest, most painful agony. If somebody's feeling that, for real, I am so right there with them and so willing to hold space for that and be present with them. And it's a privilege to be with somebody when they're in that state. But when somebody is just in the story and they're not feeling it, all they're doing is just like, I just have no tolerance for it anymore. And so I just kind of like, wow, that sounds really hard. Like that's what I've really gotten used to being able to say, wow, that sounds really hard. I can't even imagine how difficult that must be for you. But I'm kind of like basically inside, I'm just like, sucks to be you, kid. Because there is this way in which it's like, where I know, it's like they're not even present to the depth of what they're even speaking about. They're just used to being on tape loop. And I realized, I don't want to put more energy and effort into being present with somebody than they're being for themselves.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And so to come back to entrepreneurship for empath. Yeah. So would you say that being an empath make us build for entrepreneurship?
Yes.
Or rather the contrary?
I think actually it's kind of a combination that we have. It's kind of like this comedy tragedy masks. You know, it's like we are absolutely perfectly suited for entrepreneurship. And we are especially gifted because we can tune into people. We can sense what people need. We can gauge things. You know, when an empath has done their work on learning how not to absorb and keep everybody else's emotions, but instead learn how to let it flow through us, that allows us to have a feedback system that can know almost immediately if we're on track or if we're off track. And so we can adapt and adjust and meet the needs of our clients in a way that a lot of people who are not as sensitive are just not as capable of doing. Like they have to ask a lot more questions. They might have to go through a lot more like creating something or doing something before they get the feedback of like, no, you're barking up the wrong tree. Like we can sense those incredibly tiny, tiny, tiny little responses where we're like, oh, that didn't work. I'm going to shift gears. I'm going to adjust. And so it makes us remarkably good at what we do. But if we are not dealing with our own stuff and we have not learned how to navigate being an empath, the problem is that we will often absorb what is going on with somebody else, as well as we have that urgent need to rescue. Because the thing about empaths is that we feel better when other people feel better. Mm-hmm. This is especially true when we have not learned to be comfortable with our own discomfort. Because when somebody else is feeling distress or discomfort, that means that whatever distress or discomfort is going on inside of us, that gets activated by theirs. So not only are we picking up on their stuff, but a lot of times we are being activated by or triggered by their stuff and feeling our own stuff as well. When we learn how to sit with our stuff, then we can sit with other people's stuff in a way that when we haven't, it's very hard. And so we will do things like rush into rescue, overgive, undercharge, overdeliver, violate our time boundaries, reach out to people, like do the homework for people. We give somebody a homework assignment and then we end up doing it for them, or we end up like coaxing them along a lot. So those are some of the places where it can be really challenging to be an empath. And what I've seen is that on that sort of tragedy side of being an empathic entrepreneur is that when we are struggling with our sensitivity and we don't have our boundaries in place and we aren't navigating our energy effectively, what ends up happening is we will sabotage. We will shut that stuff down. So like, for example, I have seen so many empaths who are in some kind of wonderful service, profession, healer, you know, coach, consultant of some sort. And they are like, why can't I attract more clients? And I have an example of this. I had a strategy session with somebody many, many, many years ago who was a massage therapist. And she had called me to talk about doing some work because what was happening was she could not attract and work with more than 3 to 5 clients a week. Like if it was a good week, she had 5 clients doing massages. So she was maybe able to do like 1 a day.
Yeah.
But she would do a session with somebody and then she would be like completely gutted, completely exhausted, and totally just depleted for the rest of the day into the next day. And as I was listening to her, it was like, She was absorbing so much of these people's pain, so much of the worries and the concerns, and really doing a lot of the heavy lifting. Like, people were coming in expecting her to fix them, and she was trying to fix them. And so what was happening was she was getting taxed by her empathic nature so strongly that more than one client a day was more than she could handle. On paper, she's like, I want to make more money. I want to have more clients. But in reality, she could not handle more clients because the energy she was using, exerting so much of her energetic and emotional resources every single time that she worked with somebody, that that's all she could do was like one person a day.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw that, not as the person doing it, because it's much easier when you're seeing somebody else go through it, I was like, oh my God. Like, no wonder so many of us have such a hard time attracting and maintaining a large volume of clients as highly sensitive empathic entrepreneurs.
So beside learning how to set boundaries, which is a huge thing, but is there something else we can do as empath to have a chance to be successful?
Well, one thing is really being honest with ourselves about what we really want. Because one of the things I've noticed is that, I mean, this is true for most human beings, but as empaths, we will tell ourselves stories about what we think the how is. And sometimes we are imagining that our business should look a particular way, not because it's what we really want to do, but because we think that's how we're going to get there. That's how we're supposed to be doing it. So what I would say is that I actually think that one of the very first steps of towards success is really admitting to ourselves, really owning, what do I really want to do? Like, what really gets me jazzed? What really excites me? And what brings me joy? Here's an example. I have a student, and it was interesting because she was starting to have all this resistance to the idea of taking on more clients because she didn't want to lose her free time. Even though on paper, she was like, I really want more one-on-one clients. Everything she was saying was the exact opposite. I love my free time. I love being able to spend lots and lots of time with my husband and my dogs and doing my thing. And if I have a lot more one-on-one clients, that's going to cut into my time. And so I was sort of like, well, what if there's another way to do this? Like, what if it's about leveraging your time? What if it's about running another group? What if there's other ways to do this that are going to be more satisfying? So that's one thing that I think is really important for empaths, is to recognize, what do we actually really want to do, as opposed to what do we think we should do? In a lot of ways, getting to the truth of what we want is going to make it a lot easier for us to then start thinking about, what kind of business do we want to create? What kind of infrastructure do we need for that? And then really looking at, and what are the boundaries to this? What are the terms to this? Because in my experience, as an empath, there's two parts to the boundaries. There are the strategic boundaries. What are my hours? When am I willing to respond to a text message or a voicemail or a Voxer or an email? When am I not available? When does somebody need to understand that if they text me? My husband is a psychotherapist, actually, and he got a text message from a client of his on Sunday at 4:30 in the afternoon, going, hey, you got any time? And my husband is like, I'm not responding to this on a Sunday. Like, this is my time off. I'm not working. And the thing is, it's up to us to maintain those boundaries and also to be very clear with people. These are my boundaries. And if you want to find somebody who's willing to like to answer your text messages 24/7, go with God. Like, go do, you do you, boo. It's not going to be me. So there's the strategic boundaries, the just the like the time, the money, you know, if you do not do this, for example, if somebody has to cancel or reschedule an appointment and then they just drop off the radar, it's not my responsibility to chase them down. Like, if I've given them the link and said, here, go reschedule, and they don't, then maybe I'll check in once, but I'm not going to chase people. I'm not going to pursue people. So that's the strategic side of boundaries. And then there's the energetic side of boundaries. And the energetic side of boundaries is a lot more about, one, having effective filters and shields up that protect us from absorbing and taking on the pain and the struggles and the challenges of the people that we're working with. But it's also about that understanding what's ours, what's not ours, and how to release the stuff when we have taken it on, when we have absorbed it. And so it's a dance between the strategic boundaries, but also the energetic boundaries, because those boundaries, in my experience, are so incredibly important. So hopefully that gave you and your audience something to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be very useful. The fact that we also talked about that, and especially you with so many examples, it's so much easier to picture that than actually, you know, because if we only talk about the theory, it may sound also a little bit like cocky and, hey, we have figured it out and you haven't, so listen to us. But in the end, when you illustrate that with tons of examples, it's easy to understand the complexity of those situations and how actually it is hard to be an empath and it is hard to learn those stuff. Because even you and I, now we are talking, we're having a nice conversation around our own experiences as empath. Tomorrow, I'm going to do mistakes and I'm going to...
Exactly. I guarantee you, I am going to make mistakes. Yeah. I mean, I'm still learning. And, you know, you were saying earlier about like, you feel like you've learned certain lessons, but then there's other places where you still have the work. And what I find is that one of the things that has been like a lifelong lesson for me, tendency to overdo it. And so I have had, ever since I was probably in my teens, I've experienced this kind of like cycle of work, 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 crash, work, 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 crash. And as I've gotten older, I've learned how not to overdo and give away to the same extent that I used to. Like when I first started being of service and being helpful to people, I would just like take in all the lost souls. I would, you know, like adopt all the sick puppies. And then I would like get to the point where it was, I didn't have any breathing room. I didn't have any place to move. And I was just overwhelmed and exhausted. And I would have to just like pull the emergency brake. And sometimes like the way that things showed up in terms of setting boundaries, because what I've come to realize is that we can set boundaries in healthy ways or in unhealthy ways, but we're gonna set boundaries. And so for me, boundaries started with car accidents. Like every time I would push up against the edge of overdoing it, overgiving, of pushing beyond my limits, I get into a fender bender. I mean, I totaled a car because I was overdoing it. I was not respecting my boundaries. Thankfully, I ended that. Once I got the message that like this was why this was happening, I was able to shift to gears. And then I went through a period where if I overdid and I kept pushing and pushing and pushing, I would get sick. Mm-hmm. And I would have the experience of just crashing with chronic fatigue and pneumonia and Lyme disease, where it was like, oh, if you can't say no, or if I can't say no, my body will say no for me. Like there will come a point where my body is just going to be like, yeah, you're done. You need to chill out. As I've gotten older, I definitely have gotten better and better at not getting myself into quite the amount of trouble. But what I will say is that every single time I have up-leveled in my life, my need for boundaries has increased. Mm-hmm. And things that had been not an issue, as I grow, as I expand, as I up level, I have had to set better boundaries. And a lot of times it's almost like when suddenly I'm getting all kinds of unreasonable requests, when suddenly I'm feeling like somebody is making demands of me or pushing on me in a way that I'm like, yeah, that's not okay. I've learned to recognize that that is actually a sign that I'm growing, mm-hmm. and that that's a sign that I am moving to the next level. So what I would say is, in my experience, and it sounds like in yours as well, it's an ever-evolving process of coming to know and recognize like, okay, what's working for me? What's not working for me? What are my boundaries? What are my terms? How am I going to approach this? And sometimes it's like, oh, here's a demand for more boundaries. I'm going to have to deal with this again.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, my pleasure.
So if people want to work with you or want to get to know you, and I think you also have books if they want to
read books.
Where can they find you?
Okay, so I made it really simple. So the mother load of it all is empathicmastery.com. All of my social, except for Clubhouse, which I don't really have anything to do with, is at Empathic Mastery. So you can find me on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, at Empathic Mastery. And if you want to check out my books, empathicmasterybook.com. And that leads to all the books. And I've got a book that's going to be coming out about this time next year that I'm really, really excited about.
You're writing it right now?
I'm writing it right now. I was actually off at a writing retreat for the entire last week working on the edits for the book. And this is a book where it's something completely different than I've ever done before. It's completely channeled. And it's speaking to my spirit guides, who refer to themselves as the Council of We. They just basically were like, I was like, why are we in the situation we're in? And they're like, let us tell you, oh, little Padawan, let us explain. And so I'm working on it right now, and it will be coming out probably like July of 2024. Mm-hmm. But there's a bunch of books there at empathicmasterybook.com. And if you want to check out my podcast, which is called The Empathic Mastery Show, that's at empathicmasteryshow.com. So it's pretty much a system.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jennifer. It was such a pleasure to have you here.
It has been such a pleasure to talk with you. Like, I mean, there's so many things we touched on. I'm sure you and I could talk for hours about this.
Thank you so much
for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ambitious Empath Show. If you like the episode, it would mean the world to me if you could leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. And if you think it could be useful to anyone around you, please share it with your friends, with your family, or share it with fellow ambitious empath. This is Bao Yang for the Ambitious Empath Show, and I will see you next week.
Emotions can be tough to navigate, but you've got strengths to lead you on your way. Time to take control, time to reach your goals, time to let emotions go.